Hello and welcome to the Cloud Solution Architect podcast, where we talk to Azure architects from across the globe and discuss interesting and creative Azure solutions. This is your host, Anand Kumar. I work as a Cloud Solution Architect for Microsoft in the New York City region. For more Cloud Solution Architect podcast episodes, animated Azure videos, and simplified how-to content articles on Azure, please check out www.azuremonk.com. That's www.azuremonk.com. In this episode, we have with us a very special guest today, Olivier Martin. He's one of the reasons this podcast exists today. He has been an inspiration to many, like me, directly and indirectly. He's had a wide variety of experiences across different domains. We talk about all of that and how his curiousness got him to where he is today. All that and more. Without further ado, let's get to the show. Hey, Olivier. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Kumar.
Before we begin, I wanted to say, Olivier, that you truly have a very impressive resume, right? So you have an MBA from Kellogg's. You were a network engineer in Citrix. And I know I've worked with you. You've been an Azure networking global black belt, and you've been instrumental in building one of the most popular Azure networking communities ever built, Microsoft Networking Academy. And now you're a data scientist and a machine learning expert. Wow. So walk us through how each of these experiences helped you to get to where you are, and how you managed to reinvent yourself so often.
Oh, thank you. This is a good... A good intro, certainly, on myself. I'll make a slight correction. I was not at Citrix, but I was at Cisco, which is where I got my networking background. So I started over 20 years ago, I guess, as an IT professional out of college, doing an engineering degree in computer science. So that gave me sort of my background off of which I built, and also the curiosity to learn, which I think is what has driven me to want to learn new things. So for a little while, I've done networking as a consultant, so configuring routers and switches and planning for network designs and high availability and these kinds of things, and helping people, because networking is sort of the foundation of everything. Well, not everything, but I'd say a lot of pretty much all the applications that you can run mm-hmm. on a technology stack would eventually be transport packets. Whatever you do, you're going to have to, query response from a web server, from a database. And so I was always, or very often, I would say back in those days, involved in troubleshooting, mm-hmm. things that the SQL request is slow. So I sort of had to understand a bit of SQL. And I also knew a bit of SQL because of my college days. So I understand the basics of it, but also to see how it goes on the wires and in bits helps you get a fundamental understanding of a lot of things. And so I've done that for a few years as a consultant. And then I guess I like learning. So I decided that I wanted to learn about business because I had my own business at that point, but it was a one person show. And then I went to do my MBA at Kellogg's, mm-hmm. During which I would summarize this, but there was one course, mm-hmm. what was called entrepreneurial finance. Mm. And this is the day where I learned that other people's money is a great way to leverage things. So if you buy a company for $1 million mm-hmm. and it's actually the banker's money, mm-hmm. and they trust you enough with that money, so they're gonna refund your debt mm-hmm. within say 4 or 5 years, once you, if I buy it, that's what I told myself. If I buy a company in a domain that I know and understand, how bad can I be to screw it up? Mm-hmm. I thought I was going to be good enough not to screw it up. And so, and also to be able to refund the debt. And so that's what I did. Except that the financing part was harder than I thought. But, once you've gone through those years, mm-hmm. so you refunded that. So the theoretical example, you have a million-dollar company, you borrow $1 million. After 5 years, you refunded your $1 million. All the while, you were paying yourself a salary. And at the end, if you sell it in 5 years, you sell it for $1 million. That's if there's zero growth.
Yeah.
And then you made $1 million. And I said, wow, that's cool. So let me try to do that. It turns out the reality is harder than that. But that was like the basic idea. And so that got me into business. And I had a business of, we grew from about $1.5 million to over $7 million in sale, which is not huge by, you know, Microsoft standards, but by my own standards, it was pretty good. And a lot of learning in other non-technical things, you know, like business, contracts, legal, HR, all the while still being connected to the technical stuff, because it's not a, you know, it's not Microsoft sized business. So even the top executives, although I would say that they're very technical at Microsoft, I still had to be connected to the technical technical stuff. And that's until I sold the business 7 years after, which brings me in 2014, time flies, something like that. And then sold the company and joined Microsoft and started as an ATS at Microsoft, which for folks who don't know, this is like the technical counterparts to the account executive. In terms of adopting all of the Microsoft technology stack, which includes Azure, but is much broader than that. There's Office 365, there's Dynamics, there's Surface, maybe I'm forgetting things there, but there is a bunch of different technologies, but I really was still interested about networking. And when I had reached out to some of the global black belts back in the days to, I was looking after two customers and I needed to connect them to the cloud. And so ExpressRoute was the way to do that. And so as I reached out to those folks and they said, I think we need a guy like you. And the timing was great. And so this is how I got into that team. And it was fairly easy to transpose the physical networking expertise I had acquired over the years to virtual. That with curiosity. If you're just trying to make to use your physical networking knowledge and apply it to Azure, well, you're going to find that there's things that it doesn't work this way. Right. So I guess that you've heard about the growth mindset, obviously. It's key to, anyways, how I was thinking about things and wanting to learn from others and learning from others. And, you know, I love when Satya says that we have a learn it all culture.
Yep, absolutely.
And versus a know it all. I don't particularly enjoy working with know it alls, but and there's not a lot of them at Microsoft, which is good. So that's how I came to do networking. So in a way, I started with that, then some business background, and then back into Microsoft as a generalist, touch upon a bunch of technologies, not too much in depth, and then into networking. And after a while, the conversations I was having with guys like you, with other folks in the field, from my standpoint, they were repetitive, not necessarily from every architect's point of view, because for them, it's one of the 100 things they have to know. But for me, it's kind of the same thing over and over again. And so that's what got me interested in learning something else. And then I watched this video one night that a peer of mine had shared on deep learning, and I had no idea what this was. I really didn't. And so my connection to machine learning was, you know, the way that I was understanding this at that moment was when I was making a parallel to what I had learned in school, which was like a linear regression. You have a bunch of dots, you need to find the best line that connects them. And so this is a form of very primitive, but it's a form of machine learning. You're trying to learn what the best line is. And so that's the only thing I knew about this. And then I watched this video and I really get fascinated by deep neural networks, which I had no idea what they were and what they can do. And so that's what got me interested into that.
Is that video shareable to the to the public, or is that an internal video?
That was an internal video. That was an internal video, unfortunately. It was something that was done in some Microsoft research building.
Got it.
But truly inspiring. Right. And that was about 2 years ago. And then I started wanting... Go ahead. Sorry.
No, I was just going to ask. So the video inspired you to take on this new field, if you may, right? Like deep learning. And How did you go about preparing for deep learning? Did you take any course or was it mentorship? What was the process?
It was courses. I've done on, I forget the name of the course. I'll find it and I'll, you can put it in the show notes. But it was a five course, was by Andrew Ng, and I'll find it's on Coursera. Yeah, Coursera. And Andrew Ng is a fabulous communicator, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And you know, he's got, you know, if you think I have a good resume,
yep, I've seen Andrew Ng and his and he was behind the Google Brain project, is that right?
Yeah, exactly. And okay. So he's and I'm looking at his, I'm seeing his profile. He's born in the same year as I was. I guess he didn't follow the same path, but nonetheless, this guy is super inspiring. And I live in Montreal, which is also a home, one of the hubs for artificial intelligence in the world. Certainly not the hub, but there's one of the founding fathers of deep learning is around here, which is Joshua Bengio, along with he is here, but there's a bunch of there's a huge institution on machine learning and AI here in Montreal, about 250 researchers. I was fascinated by that, and then I started listening to his class on Coursera, and it truly makes it accessible. I mean, you still have to have some kind of a science background. If you haven't gone to school or done linear algebra, then I guess you don't really understand what's going on. But if you have, and I had, and not to grad school, was just undergrad school, was an undergrad degree in engineering, then I started picking this up. I was doing this on my own time. And then we had a baby in our family. And then, you know, during the nights when sleepless nights, I was watching those videos and doing the exercises. And, you know, one thing led to the next. And, you know, after a couple weeks, maybe 2 months, I think I had went through the five classes.
Okay.
And that doesn't make of me an expert, but certainly reasonably good understanding, good enough to make small projects. And certainly that's about 2 years ago. And 2 years ago, deep learning was, you know, it's certainly not mainstream for our customers. Definitely in a research community and such, but not quite there yet. So I had, and still do have a great manager. Not the same manager, but the manager I had back then trusted me to learn completely new things. You know, we have peers, or I have peers today that have PhDs in this field. And I definitely don't, but still, I was given the chance to start working in this field. So I passed from networking to first HPC, so high performance computing. And in HPC, I was focusing on GPU computing. So for deep learning, GPUs, which are the graphical processing units of typically NVIDIA makes those chips that we have on our servers that are equipped with that. And you could have on a laptop and gaming computers and such. And so those tremendously accelerate deep learning, like by 10 or 100 fold, depending on what kind of algorithms. It makes it possible. So anyways, so I was doing HPC for some time, for a couple months, so almost a year. And my focus was on GPU computing. So anytime that there were customers that were asking questions around doing, you know, distributing HPC calculations, but for GPU, whether that was for simulation or for deep learning, those requests tended to come to me and a peer of mine, Stephanie Lemus, who was a great inspiration also. Back then, both her and I were on the same team. And so I started specializing in this sort of transition period in deep learning. And then came an opportunity to join the AI team that I'm in today. And so I had to broaden my skills to, well, first learn about Azure machine learning, which when I started was not a product yet. And now has become one. And also about classical machine learning, because whenever you can do classical machine learning, so, you know, there's a bunch of other algorithms you may not use if they work for your problem. Deep learning is an extremely dark kind of black box. it's hard to explain what happens in there. And so for some scenarios, if you can't explain them, then customers don't want them. They know they work,
right?
Or they may agree that they work, but how do you, you know, tell your boss you've justified your decision based on a black box? Sometimes it doesn't quite work, right? And so I've had to learn the other alternatives and not to be the deep learning guy that only does this and doesn't understand the other things. And of course, I have a great, phenomenal team, super knowledgeable folks in other fields. So we tend to share, help each other out on areas where we're not the experts in. And so that's basically having people trust that I can learn is what had gotten me to where I am today.
Awesome. Yep.
And that's even true with when I bought my company. I bought this with a partner. I had not run a company before. Nice. Partner trusted me. Maybe I'm good at gaining trust. I don't know.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, having worked with you, I can definitely attest to that, right? And also a couple of points that you mentioned, like, you know, having the environment of encouraging the employees to learn new things and explore new things, and also having a team to back you up when you need, you know, assistance. I think that's where Microsoft is really, really good at. And I think I can also watch for that. That has been true in my case as well, right? And so I know you're surely going to have more than one, right? But if you had to choose, what would be the one Azure project or solution you delivered that you're particularly proud about, and you know, how that solved a business problem? So can you walk us through that?
Sure. There was one just a couple months ago, and I'm unfortunately unable to mention the customer name, but I think if listeners can relate to that kind of problem, they probably will see how this can be exciting. So think of it, there's a manufacturing process. You're fabricating some kind of devices or gizmos, and it's a classical case of using machine learning to improve efficiencies. And in that case, it's a computer vision problem. So imagine you have an assembly line, and you have devices, widgets that go through the assembly line. And at some point you want to inspect them, visual inspection. And you want to see if it's good or not, but let's say you're manufacturing thousands a day. Or more, then it gets more complicated to have a human. You know, there's fatigue, there's all kinds of reasons why, and humans are not perfect, nor is machine learning, by the way. But so the goal was to identify the devices that were going to be called as bad, when in reality they were good. So originally when I discussed with the customer, I realized that, you know, first of all, I said, those devices are worth very little dollars in my mind. And they are, they're really not worth a lot of money.
Okay.
So to me, to, you know, say that this one is bad when it's not, I was asking myself, what's the big deal? Well, it turns out that it's not the monetary value of the thing. It's that if a system says the widget is bad, and that means that you're going to have to shut down your production line. That has a huge cost.
I see. Okay.
Because you need to trace back, right? Which of the steps along, so you have, I don't know, 15 stations or 50, which one or which ones of those is, you know, is behaving badly. And so there's a lot of research to be done. And if you automate the process of finding, you know, this device is bad, and then you shut down the whole thing, it costs X amount of dollars per minute, per second, per hour, whatever it is. And it turns out it was a, you know, let's call this a false negative, which is, I guess, the term in machine learning. So it's falsely said to be a negative thing, assuming negative means it's bad. Then it costs a lot of money. And so what I've done essentially is gotten a lot of images from the customer, all standardized, all taken by the same kind of lighting, same camera, same environment, and gathered this and created used Azure Machine Learning and something called Hyperdrive to look for hyperparameters, which is a technical term and you look at how you build models to find if the models are not to find it, but rather to find the best parameters to your machine learning models to build your models. So for folks who don't know what this is, mm-hmm. think of it as maybe which model should I be using? For example, there's good models that are known to mm-hmm. to function super well on images, but which of those are you going to use? How many layers of your deep neural network are you going to require? And then what's the learning rate? And unless you've taken, well, you could take Andrian's class if you want to learn about those. Mm-hmm. But if then I've used this hyperdrive thing to find which network would best. Which network and which parameter should we use to find the best solution to this problem? Mm-hmm. And it turns out that we got a phenomenal outcome. A great performance, but it took not that long, but I guess maybe 2 or 3 weeks of work. Not necessarily full time, but most of my time was put on there, I guess. And then we got great results at the end, and that we even have some learnings that help us improve our products out of this.
That's awesome. That's awesome. That's really cool. So from a accuracy ratio, so you were able to meet the business requirements using the solution that you had provided. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah.
Awesome.
It was a bit of a challenge, but we ended up finding one and learning also mm-hmm. a lot of, how to use the tool in proper ways to get that and test for getting the best outcomes. And mm-hmm. A lot of learning for me, certainly.
Mm-hmm. Got it. And from an Azure service perspective, so you're saying you primarily leveraged Azure machine learning services, right?
That's correct. Yeah.
Okay. Awesome.
There's underlying services like Azure. If you provision an Azure machine learning workspace, which is mm-hmm. my Azure service, it provisions a storage account, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. provisions a container registry, app insights, okay. and I forget the last one. Provisions for underlying services, but so it uses the other ones, but mainly the main one that was in use by this was Azure Machine Learning.
Awesome.
And sometimes it uses Kubernetes or mm-hmm. Azure Container Instances for serving, but in that case it was going to be served on prem. So it's unclear at this stage what's going to be used on prem.
Right? Got it. Okay, that's awesome. All right, so I have to be honest, Olivier, I know we talked about this earlier. So you're partly the inspiration for why this podcast exists today. You've been an inspiration to people directly or indirectly, right? And you truly exemplify growth mindset. So with that in mind, what would be your tips or tricks for new Azure architects?
Be curious. That's the thing that... that drives basically all that I do. Like mm-hmm. looking right now, and you guys don't see this because it's not video, but in my office, I usually work from home. Mm-hmm. And one of the personal project that I work on is robotics. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to use a lot of Azure services on this robot. So far it's not gotten there yet, but it will. Mm-hmm. Certainly for computer vision, and built this out of Legos. When I was a kid, I played with Legos. So I'm using Mindstorm and Raspberry Pis, and I want to run TensorFlow on this thing. And I'm not too far from there. I'm mm-hmm. still figuring out the mechanics part. But the point of this all is being curious. Mm-hmm. I was always fascinated by robots and read books not too long ago from Asimov, who's a great writer in my opinion, but mm-hmm. still very fictitious. But robots fascinated me, and so I took another class also in Coursera on robotics. Mm-hmm. Okay. So learned through sort of the linear algebra, which was a refresher for deep learning, because it's the similar, it's very different, but it's the same base math concepts and matrices, multiplication to find where mm-hmm. things are in space. One of the challenging things in robotics is where are you? Mm-hmm. Where the heck is the robot? Mm-hmm. You know where your hand is, you see it, but how does the device really know where it is? And so, especially if you're dealing with non-professional things like Legos, there's so much wiggle You know, the arm moves and the gears don't necessarily move because the arm moves because it's sort of, it's not metal, it's not steel.
Yep.
And so this is a challenging thing to understand where you are, so the gripper can actually track an object. So I'm passionate about these things, about technology, and read on these things all the time. Even if it's not directly related to work, the experiences that I get out of this is they are helping me in my work.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Just because I keep learning, and the thing that I like to think about when I was in undergrad school that I've learned is how to learn. You know, you were given and if you've been to school, and you know, you have been tasked of, you know, you've got this assignment, you have 2 weeks to come up with it. And that's one class, and you may have like four others at the same time, maybe more. And so you have to find ways to really quickly find solutions to things. And so you have to learn things you didn't know before. And when I was in undergrad school, the internet was not too, I mean, it was there because I started in 94 and ended in 98. But it was definitely not like it is today. Like YouTube did not exist. But you could still browse and look for things, and Google started to exist, I think, in 98, or I started to use it in 98 anyways. But the search engines of the time, you know, they didn't have nearly as much to index as there is today, obviously. But I learned how to find things, and I still apply this today. And, you know, I do Azure certifications, and not that I think they're an end in themselves, but you still have to learn a bunch of things. Recently, I've had to do for keeping, I guess, being a good employee. And also, you know, I had to do DP200 and DP201, which are data platform exams. So even if that's not my core focus, my core focus is not on the data platform. But, you know, if you look at machine learning, there's three things that feed off machine learning. There's algorithms, there's data, and there's compute. And so the compute is the GPUs, is those great things. Research out of universities come up with all of these algorithms, and the data. Well, you know, the data, if you have them in a CSV file, that's great, but that's usually for tutorials. And in real life, and you may have them in real life too, but in real life, the data sets usually are super massive, and they may be on SQL data warehouse, they may be on competing platforms, wherever they are. So learning about these, even if they don't directly help me in most conversations I have every day with customers, well, what I do every day is I interact with this data that sits somewhere. So you know, I had to do it for being, I guess, consistent with the rest of the team and the rules, but I also think it's super valuable because that's what we interact with every day. And so be curious, want to learn, you know, those are things that served me very well, and I don't intend to stop.
Absolutely. That's awesome. So, Oliver, actually, I was reading a book recently called How to Fail at Everything and Still Win Big by Scott Adams. And I think he talks about something that you sort of talked about as well, right? So every additional skill that you learn, you're going to build on top of it, and it's going to be, your value is going to increase multifold by adding one new skill. Like you said, you know, when you're learning machine learning, the fact that, you know, compute, you've worked on HPC, and you know, went through the course for algorithms, and now you're also mastering in the data platform side. I think it all falls together into one piece, and I think that's really critical. We might not be able to see the big picture on day one, but having those skills, foundational skills, is really going to be helpful. And I really like the analogy of the school subjects that you also mentioned, right? So if you have a particular assignment that you need to complete, we have to manage the time and make sure that we get it done.
And this is also what happens with the customers. I'm not facing customers like you are in a cloud solution architect role. I mean, in some ways, yes, but in some ways, no. You get asked probably a lot of questions on topics you are not a master of, because there's just so many topics.
Absolutely.
And some you may have a major in, you're super good in this, and some you're not as good in this because you're not experienced as much. And this is when having this skill to be able to quickly learn and find information is super helpful. But also in a community like ours, at least inside mm-hmm. of Microsoft and throughout the internet, more broadly, but there's people who already solve those kinds of problems.
Yep.
And if you know who those people are and how to reach out to them, and in the internal community, it's easier, I guess, because we can all chat to each other pretty quickly. Build on top of others' work.
Mm-hmm.
Don't try to reinvent the wheel. Somebody has solved this problem before.
Absolutely. Yep.
May not be the same, but if but if it's similar enough,
mm-hmm.
you can save yourself a lot of time.
Right.
And still learn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm actually very curious, as a fellow Raspberry Pi enthusiast, I'm actually curious where you get with the Lego, robotics piece. So I'm working on a home automation project with Raspberry Pi.
Oh, this is cool.
Yeah, to sort of water my plant, but it's really exciting. So I've always wondered, Olivier, like looking at your learning appetite and, your ability to master new, exciting and sort of complex concepts, like you said, right? Do you have a productivity hack or a daily routine or any other trip? Sort of tips on how you keep yourself abreast with all the new technologies out there. And you mentioned you have to be curious, right? So what is the process once? So curiousness, I would say, is the base foundational thing, right? So once you're curious, how do you go about learning it? Do you have a particular process or a method to learn new stuff?
This is a good question. I certainly don't have a formal process, but I guess when I look at what I do, I follow a similar trend when I dig into something. This robotics thing, I've been on it for, I'd say, about a year and a half. And so if somebody would look at the robot and say, it took you a year and a half to build that, then I guess I would tell you, look at the, I'm not using any of the Mindstorm stuff except the uh-huh. bricks. So I would encourage you to look at the code and then maybe you understand why I spend more time. But and then that has brought me to want to learn more about Python, which by the way, you also have to understand very well for machine learning, because most things, like recent things, and specifically in deep learning, it's pretty much all Python. Mm-hmm. There's a bit of R. I don't mm-hmm. know R. I have colleagues that know R very well, and that's how we leverage each other. Mm-hmm. But now I'm reading on, like recently I learned how IMUs work, which are inertial motion. I'm not sure what the U stand for, but they're motion sensors, gyroscopes, and that helps find how where is my robot arm, for example, or where is this thing, whatever this thing is. You have one in your phone. When you incline the phone and it detects that you're moving it left and right when you're playing games or whatever you're doing. And that, so I had to understand how those things work. And so whenever I am working on a project, I find something, if it's not really interesting to me, I guess I pass. But if it is, and I dig until I really understand how this thing works. And then I move to the next thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've done like these days, I'm learning on generator functions in Python and asynchronous programming. I'm not a developer. I mean, maybe some people would say I'm a developer, but I'm not. Like some people have developed software professionally, being, delivered project. We have a lot of these people at Microsoft mm-hmm. that have done this and are doing this every day. Mm-hmm. But I'm more of an enthusiast. But, and for about a year, I've been learning Python and doing Python every day. And I still learn, because there's, when you're doing machine learning, you learn a set of things in Python, certainly mm-hmm. how to use the NumPy and Pandas and all of those libraries. Mm-hmm. But in this project, there's a lot of things that happen at the same time. So I have to learn what async programming is. And so for, I guess, C# developers, it might be super easy because they've done this all their life. Mm-hmm. But for me, it's not that easy. Mm-hmm. And debugging asynchronous things is, I think, very complicated or harder. And so it's when I stumble on a new thing, then I start reading on this. And then as I read on this, and sometimes I find a new author mm-hmm. and then I may listen to their YouTube videos or something where I will learn about something else. It's usually not directly related to work.
Mm-hmm.
But I have a passion for technology. So anything that I learn inside of my passion, ends up helping, I think, in my professional work too.
And do you have like a particular time set in your calendar for, learning, let's say Python, right? So you're learning asynchronous programming in Python. So do you have every week, do you schedule some time off your calendar? Is that how you work? I know you said you just had a, newly born baby as well. So how do you manage your, because I have a 1 year old, so I can understand.
Well, I have a four, she turned four. She's turning four today, in fact.
Oh, okay. Awesome. Happy birthday to her.
I passed the words. And the little guy is turning two in 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. But hopefully they're in bed I guess between 8 and 9, they're normally should be both asleep. Mm-hmm. And so, after that, do a little bit of chores in the house and sometimes spend times working on these things. And some of the times my wife and I watch Netflix or something. But I usually do this, I guess, between 10 and midnight. Okay. And then I go to bed, and hopefully the little guys don't wake up until 7 in the morning. Mm-hmm. You can have a restful night. But that's when I do these things at night.
Okay, that's awesome.
And I get to learn on the job as well, because there's a lot of my job which has nothing to do with robotics, but doing proof of concepts and stuff like that with our customers. I usually use Python because that's all I know well enough, anyways. I do a lot of the learnings that can be passed from one domain to the other.
Mm. Got it. And how do you keep up with like new updates in the technology? Do you follow Azure updates or do you follow?
I try to follow them. It's not even easy just to keep up to date with AML.
I know. Tell me about
like
it.
Azure machine learning. Every week there's new things that come out. Uh-huh. And that I think I'm fairly current with. I mean, more than most. Maybe not most of my peers. I don't know, but mm-hmm. But most of our customers, because they have to keep up with their own business with a million other things. Mm. So it's hard for them. But I look at the updates that come, and I will read the. I look at LinkedIn like every day. Take a mm-hmm. look, and some of my peers are posting some updates. Sometimes it might be you. Sometimes whoever it is, and then I will just click. It's a new blog, and so. I follow what happens in HPC networking just because I'm interested in these things. I don't necessarily want to do this professionally, but even if I look at networking and I look at what I do in AML, when customers want to deploy it, they will ask the same questions. And so to know about those. And so I keep current on some of these things, not in super depth because I have peers that will cover those, but in what I do specifically, which is AML, and related technologies, I try to stay as current as I can given the time I have, and given I have a young family. I mean, I started late, I guess my family. I guess we have more wisdom. That's what people say. I don't know.
Absolutely,
but...
yeah, that is true, or at least that's what I've been told as well.
Well, I think I have way more wisdom than when I was 20.
That counts. That definitely counts.
I would be glad if I had them when I was 20. But they're lovely and and it's great. So, that's awesome. In a nutshell.
Awesome. All right, I'm going to go ahead and link the Microsoft Networking Academy and the links to the Coursera and your LinkedIn profile in the show notes. But apart from that, if people had to get in touch with you, what would be the best way to get in touch with you?
Well, a message on LinkedIn.
Message on LinkedIn. Awesome.
I have an account on Twitter, but I don't tweet, so mm-hmm. I will probably miss it. Mm-hmm. So the best would really be on LinkedIn or email. Mm-hmm. You could feel free to put my email if you want, but LinkedIn is probably the best.
Awesome, Mario. It was really, really nice talking to you, and I think I personally learned a lot, especially from a life hack perspective, being curious. I can totally relate to that for me as well. If I don't understand something, I'm really, really curious on how that works. So
yeah, if you're trying to automate your home with a Raspberry Pi, there's a lot of things that you need to learn to make this work properly, and I have no doubt that that this it's a phenomenal idea.
Yeah, but every once in a while I do, I sort of question myself. My wife is like, "Why are you spending so much time on that? It's not really helping you in your job." Yeah, maybe not right now, but eventually someday.
It helps build some of the, let's call them, I guess, non-technical or yeah, maybe technical, but skills that may not be directly linked to your role. But those skills are helpful further down the line.
Absolutely. Awesome, Oliver. Thank you so much. It was great talking to you.
My pleasure. Thanks for the opportunity, Kumar. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye-bye.